Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the fourth day of 2020. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose. Nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. But before that, let me just say to everybody, Happy New Year!
There were so many memes going around that Barbara Walters should have been on the New Year's Eve specials. And I'm Barbara Walters, and this is 2020.
Right. And we're live on the air. Hi. Hi, everybody.
I read an interesting warning from, I think it was one of the banking associations, don't abbreviate your checks and contracts and things.
Yeah, you know, for 20.
20, like we normally would. Because then, you know, on like an employment contract, someone could sneak in 2017 and say, you owe me 3 years back pay.
Right. Okay, this news item. Microsoft has been warning us that this day would come, and now it's almost here. Windows 7 end of life lands this Tuesday, January 14th. After the deadline, Windows users running Windows 7 will face a difficult choice. Cough up for a hefty bill to upgrade to Windows 10, or brace themselves for some dangerous risks on their home PC.
Or pay Microsoft an ever-increasing amount to continue supporting Windows 7 on your enterprise PC.
Right. For enterprises, they can do that. For home users, ain't going to happen.
Well, you could buy the enterprise version for home if you wanted.
That's true. That's true, you could. By ending support for the aging Windows 7, which was first launched back in July of 2009, Microsoft will stop rolling out updates with new features, security updates, and protections against malware. That means any issues with the software or any new vulnerabilities discovered by cyber criminals can be leveraged indefinitely. Also, any annoying bugs or glitches that crop up will never be fixed. If you'd like to benefit from the latest security protection and antivirus solutions from Microsoft, you'll have to update your machine to an operating system Microsoft does support, namely Windows 10. That's pretty much the only one. Although Microsoft has offered free upgrades to users running official versions of its operating systems in the past, that's not possible at the moment. Yes, there are a lot of you who swear that there are still ways to upgrade to Windows 10 from Windows 7 for free using tools provided by Microsoft. However, representatives from Microsoft say that its no-cost upgrade offer expired on 31 December 2019, so you just missed it.
But apparently, if you go to the website and download the media creation tool, it doesn't bother checking that the date's wrong.
I'll get to that.
Okay.
I'll get to that.
I should read your stuff when it comes at midnight. I should read it, shouldn't I?
You probably should. Or at any time during the morning of Saturday.
I'm at work.
Yeah. Yeah, because I got a comment. The minute I saw that, though. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes, there are a lot of you. I already did that one. And before you call saying you read an article online that still says you can get it for free, check the date. Because I saw a whole lot of those articles. They were from 2017 or 16 or 15. Microsoft also says that the vast majority of Windows 7 users moving to a new computer with Windows 10 pre-installed is the recommended path. Today's PCs are faster, lightweight, yet powerful and more secure, with an average price that is considerably less than that of the average PC over 9 years ago, Microsoft said. Those wanting to install Windows 10 Home Edition on their current hardware will need to pay $140, which is a license for one PC. And that's the cheapest legally available option. The price to upgrade your PC spirals to $200 for Windows 10 Pro and a jaw-dropping $310 for Windows 10 Pro for workstations. At those prices, Microsoft's argument about moving to a new notebook with all the benefits of a new display, trackpad, keyboard, and most importantly of all, a new battery makes a little more sense. Now, having said all that, you can download and install Windows 10 for free without an activation key. However, on screen, you will see a nag watermark that says activate this version of Windows 10, and some things don't work. Also, you may not get some updates in the future. Microsoft has said that it unactivated versions of Windows will not get certain updates in the future, although they haven't instigated that yet, instituted that yet. But so if you actually want to make sure that your Windows 10 is secure, and here's a hint, you do, you need to buy it. And so our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is when 7 reaches EOL, that's end of life, on Tuesday, 7 Jan. And your choices are, I'm safely on Windows 10. Oh no, my poor 20-year-old PC. I'm living on the edge, baby. And who still uses Windows? And of course, others. So far we have 32 votes. And who still uses Windows is number one, breathing right on its heels as I'm safely on Windows 10. Five of you are living on the edge, and one of you has a 20-year-old PC and is bemoaning that it's there. And, of course, if you have something else you'd like to say, you can join us in the forums, which is on our homepage. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion, and the first item under the poll discussion, at least right now, is 4 Jan 20, when 7 reaches EOL on Tuesday, 7 Jan. And of course, you can give us a call. So are you still using Windows 7? For Pete's sake, why? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
They just created quite a conundrum.
Yeah.
Because, all right, you're now faced with, all right, do I want to take the chance of having my Windows machine, 7 machine, possibly get infected? Or
likely to be infected if it's on the internet. I mean, that's all automated stuff. And so they're actively, the bots are actively searching and night.
What I'm saying, though, is you're faced with that fact.
Yes.
Or do I want to put on an operating system, pay through the nose on that, and then get the updates that will brick it?
Well, that's or, your choice. Yeah.
Or install Cloud Ready.
That's why.
Neverware and right. Cloud Ready.
Yeah. If you've got an old PC, put Never Ready, put Cloud Ready's Neverware. Neverware's Cloud Ready. Jeez and crackers. That's what I get for taking a week off. I can't think, much less talk.
Remember me with Foxfire and Firefox?
Yes, yes. I remember.
Yeah.
You can run. I tried it last week, in fact, when I got home. I spun up a virtual machine through Windows 10 on it with no activation key. It does continually have a little watermark at the bottom that says, you know, activate this version. It's a nag screen, but
I think if you install it over an existing Windows 7, you don't get the nag screen as much.
I don't know that.
But I've done the same thing in a VM,
right?
To run one of my airplane updaters.
That just adds more credence to going to a Chromebook.
Go to a Chromebook, get Linux, buy a Mac, do whatever. Macs are more expensive than buying Windows 10, but I did run it there. It runs fine. There are certain things you cannot do, mm-hmm. and whether any of those things bother you, well, there's your $110. You know, that's just the way that works. But yeah, you can run it without an activation key, at least for now. Mm-hmm. Again, you're just kicking the can down the road.
Yep. Just playing Russian roulette.
Right, because Microsoft has said that they are going to start checking activation keys more diligently, I believe they said. So you may in the future find that you boot up your Windows 10 and all the data are gone. Not gone, but inaccessible to you. So maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea to constantly perform backups. If you're going to run an unauthorized copy of Windows 10, which, by the way, is actually theft, if you're going to steal a copy of Windows 10, be diligent in your backups.
And that's one thing, even if you have a bought copy. Right now, I'm sorry, that would be the first thing I would do after I got, say, a new machine. I don't care if you go to the store. Say I went over to Staples, bought a laptop, brought it home. It's got Windows 10 on it. The first thing I'm doing with that thing is backing it up.
Oh, yeah.
Because as sure as God made green apples, they're going to throw out another update that could possibly just trash your machine. It's not, if it's going to happen, it's when is it going to happen?
Well, I suggest that anytime you have an update, before you run the update, do a backup. Done.
And make sure it ran. We get so many people that come into the shop say, well, I think I'm backing up. All right, your last backup was 1,487 days ago, and it's been warning you that you have no backup.
Right.
Well, in defense of Microsoft, which usually I don't like to do, but I will say for them, the issues that they're having in a lot of stuff that's being bricked is because, unlike, say, the days back when, heck, even Windows 7, when that came out, or 95, the number of machines out there and the peripherals that are in it and the combination thereof is a lot to deal with. I mean, back in the day, there used to be, say, a 386 machine, and it would have a mouse, a couple hard drives, this type of video card or that type of video card, and it worked. Nowadays, you can get so many different video cards, so many different sound cards, so many different motherboard combinations, CD-ROM drives, and all this other combination that when you put it into one bundle, they might not play well.
You can buy two seemingly identical computers at the same time, and their innards are all different.
Yeah. Motherboards could be totally different.
What Microsoft used to do is they had rooms and rooms and rooms full of every conceivable combination of product. And then they got rid of all of it, and they virtualized it. So they only test Windows 10 now on virtual machines, which are all identical. So if you've got something that isn't part of the virtualization, it's never been tested. And so they're having lots and lots more problems now.
And that's why a lot of them are causing brick issues.
Right.
And they've also sort of changed how their development cycle works, is that instead of a major release every 5 years or so, they're doing two major releases every year, and then major patches are needed every month because they keep trying to add more and more things to continually evolve it, which sounds good on paper,
right?
But it does mean that you never have a stable code base that works.
And well, the other thing, though, just to interject for a second, though, and the quality of the product, the different things. What used to be made maybe in Japan or some, which do great quality, are now being shipped over to China because they can make it a lot cheaper, and the quality and components may not be the best, but they're getting the job done. But if you put them under stress, that's when they're failing.
And what Microsoft is trying to do is emulate Linux. Linux things update fairly constantly. It's a rolling update until you get to a major release. But most of the Linux programs are standalone. So if I make a change to the little program I wrote and you make a change to the little program you wrote, they don't interfere with each other.
Shared DLLs. Must have sounded like a good idea at the time.
I'm sure it did, but it sure wasn't. But on top of that, that means I can put out my update today. You might put out your update tomorrow. So there's little updates all the time for Linux, but they don't interfere with the main system. We got to get in line. And I think Microsoft was trying to emulate that, but because Linux is all volunteer, they've got tens of thousands of people working on those programs.
Yeah.
All right. To the phones. We've had Dan patiently waiting on the line in Brighton, New York. Thank you for your patience, Dan. What's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Peachy, you?
Okay, so where do you find the path to find the right stuff to upgrade to Windows 10 Pro from Windows 7 Pro?
I don't know Google. That you can freely update to 10 Pro.
Yeah, I think it's just...
Well, if you're coming from Pro, you can go to Pro, but you can't go from Home to Pro easily. It's the Microsoft Media Creation Tool. We've got links on our website. I'll put another one on there now.
Fantastic. And does it automatically update or transfer programs like Microsoft Office, et cetera, or do they need to be reinstalled?
Theoretically, they will all work. Here's the problem with updating 7 to 10. Drivers. Many drivers that were written for Windows 7 will not work for Windows 10. So once you've done an update, test everything.
Yeah, you need to test the applications you have to make sure they're running okay in Windows 10. The peripherals, your Ethernet card, your sound card, your video card, make sure they have Windows 10 drivers. That's why a lot of people don't upgrade to Windows 10 because it's such a hassle. And why Microsoft says buying a new computer pre-installed is best because everything is there. But this is it's like the olden days when you had to tinker with your computer.
Yeah,
and a lot of folks though don't know how to even do that.
Well, right. But the other thing, Dan, is if you've got a name brand computer like a Dell or an HP or whatever, all of those companies have on their website a place where you can type in the serial number, and it will tell you what the latest drivers are for that machine.
And if it's compatible with Windows 10 or not. In fact, many of them had a Windows 10 upgrade guide.
Right. Yep. So you might want to check that out before. If you've got a... Hello?
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
If you've got a name brand... you know, mainstream machine, I would suggest that you do all those tests before you just randomly install the thing. How old is your machine?
5 years.
How much RAM?
4 to 8 gig.
Okay, 4 gig is a minimum for Windows 10, and it is a minimum. 8 is certainly better. So if you've got 8, you should be fine.
Yeah, was it 4 gigs works great with Windows? If you want to run another program too, then you need more.
Yeah, 8 more.
Yeah, they say 4 is the minimum, and they really mean, you know, response time. If you've got more than one program open, response time.
Yeah, and if you've got the spots, it can add additional memory. I would definitely advise it. Go up to 16.
Yep.
At least 8. 16 is better. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, if he's got the spots and he's going to put the money into that,
why not?
To, you know, at least make the experience of running Windows 10 a little bit better, I'd definitely recommend 16.
Right. And that's the other reason that Microsoft recommends a new machine, because your processors are much faster, the cache is bigger, the data paths are faster from RAM to the processor itself, the RAM is faster, the battery is, you know, all of them. The machines have incremented significantly in every single area. So running Windows 10 on a new machine is a significantly better experience than putting Windows 10 on an older machine. But if you've got an older machine, you don't want to spend the money, then you can certainly do it, but be aware that it's not optimum.
Got it. Second question, changing gears to Linux. Where do I find Nautilus, the file manager, and how do I install it?
Which version of Linux are you running?
Ubuntu 18 point something.
Isn't Nautilus?
It's on, it's at GNOME.org. I see it.
GNOME.org?
Yeah.
You should already have it in your system. What file manager are you currently running?
Well, I can't tell.
It's probably Nautilus.
Where would it say? How can I access it?
It just automatically runs. When you open up, when you double-click a folder and it opens up, you're in Nautilus.
Okay.
Well, the way you tell is from a command line, you do... apt show Nautilus. And if you have aptitude, you could say aptitude show Nautilus. And it will give you all kinds of information, but one of the lines will say either installed or not installed.
Okay.
And that's the easiest way to tell. If you're running Screen Fetch, you can install that as well. I think that tells you too.
Okay.
I think there's a terminal program called Screen Fetch, and it shows you a number of things. And I think one of the things it shows you is no, maybe not. Maybe it only shows you your themes. Yeah, maybe not. But you should be able to tell whether or not it's installed just by using apt, apt show Nautilus. And it should be the I think it's the default for Ubuntu 18.04.
Okay. All right. I'll give it a shot.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just bringing up. Yeah, it's Nautilus. Yeah, you're running Nautilus. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye bye. Yeah. File managers are. I don't know why I did that. File managers are built into every operating system. When you double click a folder in any operating system, and it opens up more folders or files or whatever. That's the file manager. That's the graphical file manager.
Remember in Windows 3, it was called file manager?
Yes.
Yeah.
And because they, you know, for all the money Microsoft has, they don't have anybody who can make up names. Everything's Explorer something.
And Matt called it Finder.
Right.
That's oh,
where,
yeah.
That's where you find your files.
Right. but, yeah, so those things, and there's a lot of them. There's Thunar, which I use on XFCE. And there's just a, you know, there's a bunch. Nemo and Crusader and just bunches of them. But Nautilus is the default file manager under GNOME, which is the graphical user interface that Ubuntu uses. It was for a while using something called Unity, but they switched. I think they switched off of that by 18.04. So GNOME is the default now.
And then going back to upgrading your PC, one of the sort of confusions in the marketplace is that the newer chips appear to be slower because they're more efficient. Right. You know, so say 5 years ago we had a 3 gigahertz, you know, Intel Core i5, and now we've got a 2.5 gigahertz Intel Core. But 5 years ago it was a dual core. Today it's a 6 core.
Right.
And so it's like a 2-cylinder engine versus a 4-cylinder engine. It runs at a slower RPM, but everything about the chip is faster.
Right. So, yeah, you'll find that many things, buying, that's another thing about buying a new machine.
Yeah.
You can't just look at the raw specs without knowing what underlies those specs.
Right, because those raw specs will probably seem lower than what you already have.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You That We Are member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Dennis from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Dennis?
Well, I bought my son a Chromebook for Christmas, and turns out he cannot run a particular music creating program on it. The program is called Sibelius, S-I-B-E-L-I-U-S.
Yeah, Sibelius is one of the more common music programs.
So I'm looking at the requirements for that. It says Windows 7 SP1 or later, or a Mac. Once I buy this refurbished laptop, whether it's going to be a Mac or Windows, it's not going to be used on the Internet other than to download Sibelius. But I'm a little confused in the Mac part because it says Windows 10.10, 10.11, 10.12, all the way up to 10.14. Is it possible to get a Mac with those operating systems on it?
Not a new one, no. The 10.15 is the current OS. There are still some machines coming with 10.14 if they were produced earlier. But before that, you don't have to run Sibelius. There are a dozen music editing programs that will run fine on the Chromebook.
I haven't convinced him to look. I tried to convince him, I should say, to look at other programs, but this is the one he wants. Let me ask you one other question. Below this part where it's giving the Mac operating systems, it says the following storage device format is not supported: APFS case sensitive, APFS case sensitive encrypted, Mac OS extended case sensitive journaled, Mac OS extended case sensitive journaled encrypted. What does that have to do with buying a refurbished Mac?
That's how the disk is. That's how your disk is formatted. So, like on Windows, is usually HFS. NTFS. And then you had, before that was FAT32, before that was FAT16. So there's a lot of different disk formats you can use.
So if I went out and looked for a refurbished Mac, say a 10 operating system with a 10.13 on it, would that have any of those configurations that I just described?
Yeah, it has them all. So you can choose whichever one you want when you format the drive.
It's like, just to go back for a second, though, playing devil's advocate, are there any other programs, Steve, that are out there that are just as good?
Sure.
Well, it doesn't matter. If that's the one he wants, then...
Yeah, no, I understand that, but I'm just trying to save the guy some money.
Right.
You know, I mean...
Well, what I'm still confused is, if I buy a refurbished Mac, and I read to you all those, the Mac OS extended, case-sensitive, Mac OS extended, blah, 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 that I'm still not going to be able to run that Sibelius program because the Mac is going to automatically have that disk configuration.
Yeah, but you formatted in one of the formats it can work with.
When you get the drive, one of the things that happens is when you first start it, do you
no.
get it?
Well, it's done at the factory.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm buying a refurbished laptop and say a Mac, and it's going to be not the newest one, but a little bit older one. I'm going to go try and download Sibelius on it. Am I going to run into a problem because of these configurations? It's telling me
you may. It depends on how the factory formats it, and then if it's formatted wrong, you reformat it the way it needs to be.
Yeah. Once you get it, you can reformat the drive in one of those formats that you just mentioned. There are utilities on the drive itself that let you reformat it. So if it ends up being wrong, then you can reformat it to what you want.
I see. Okay. The other possibility is I have a laptop, a Windows 7 laptop, but it only boots up into safe mode, and I'm in safe mode. I can see the recovery tool, and I attempt to do restore to factory defaults, and the thing says hard drive configuration is not set to factory default, restore aborted.
Yeah. How old is this machine?
It's 10 years old.
Yeah, that's, I suspect that the disk is not well.
You can try an erase and install, and that will map out any bad blocks during the erase. But
you have to have the Windows 7 installation disk,
right,
in order to do that.
Okay. All right. Well, you guys have been helpful. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Yeah, there are lots of programs that will write scores, which is what Sibelius
Notations
does.
Up. Yeah, and I didn't realize Avid had bought Sibelius.
Yeah.
Avid's big for video editing, and they needed a music program.
They needed a music program. There are lots of programs that do that, but if his son needs that specific program, then he is limited to what he can buy for it. There's a I think it's called Lilypad, actually, that does much the same thing on Linux.
Yeah, I found several of them for specifically Chrome, Audio Tool, Twisted Editor, Audacity, even. Well, that's more. It's a wave editor rather than a notation program.
You want a music notation editor.
Note flight. Flat. Oh. There's one called flat. That's interesting. A crescendo.
Yeah, there's lots of them, and they all run on a Chromebook. But if what he wants specifically. I mean, he may need it for classes, for example.
Yeah, that's true.
If he's taking a class and they say use Sibelius, well, then he's pretty much stuck using Sibelius. That's the way that works. I get it. I don't know beyond that what to say. It's a conundrum.
Yeah. Sibelius can be expensive, too. They do have a student pricing for $10 a month forever.
Right. There is a free version, but it only gives you four voices.
Yeah. Or you buy it
four instruments.
You buy it outright for $300.
Right. I'm assuming if he's doing it for a class, they're using the free version, and they're only doing four. But maybe he's taking a composition class.
Yeah. Or the school has a site license.
But he's got to have a program that will actually run that. And that's the thing about Chromebooks. They do an amazing amount of stuff, but they may not do it specifically with the piece of software that you want to use. There are programs that are written solely for Windows, solely for the Mac, solely for those two operating systems together, but are not designed to run on, for example, a Chromebook. Now, the latest Chromebooks can also run Android and Linux programs. So although I have a pretty slow machine here, I can boot up Linux and run, for example, Lily Pond. I'll have to look it up. Run any of those programs on it. So for example, if you've got an Android program that does what you want it to do. So, for example, a friend of mine bought himself a Chrome box and could not any longer talk to his printer, which I don't remember what brand it was, but you had to connect through a specific type of software.
Yeah.
So he couldn't print anything, except that they had an Android app.
Yeah.
So he now loads the Android app and prints through the Android app. It's that easy.
I've seen a few programs, hardware like that, where you must have Windows OS to set it up, but then once it's set up, it works with any OS.
Right. This is only a slower machine. Lilypad.
Wasn't that the name of the frog BBS?
Yeah. No, Lily. The Lily Pond, which is actually the name of the software.
Found it out. So you named it after that, right?
It was the Lily Pond. And our phone number was 271-7663.
Sorry to anyone who has that number now.
Right, I really no. By now, it's not a problem. But that number was the Lily Pond, was the Frog Pond BBS, the Frog Pond BBS.
And people still dialing in wanting to download files,
right? And when I got the phone number, I asked for a pond. I wanted the pond. But the best I could get was the 271 exchange with pond as the number, and I realized that 271 is BS1, which was really appropriate for the Frog Pond BBS. But Lily Pond is the program for typesetting sheet music under Linux. So if for anybody else, obviously not for Dennis's son, who specifically wants Sibelius. But for anybody else, if you wanted to typeset music, sheet music, do notation, sheet music notation, you can, if you've got a Chromebook, boot up the Linux portion and install Lilypond. And it comes in multiple languages. If you happen to speak Chinese or Dutch or Hungarian or whatever, and you can run that software there. And as Steve said, there was a bunch of different software that was available for the Chrome OS itself, much of it available online. Many programs nowadays are available online, so a Chromebook will run all of them.
Plus any apps that you have on your phone.
Plus the apps.
Yeah, I mean, they've made it so it's hard not to want to use a Chromebook because, again, with the, just what we tout each week, no viruses. Oh, no worries about it being bricked by a Windows update. Gee, how comforting is that?
And if there is a problem, the easiest fix is to erase it and reinstall.
Yeah, you can do that.
Just do a factory, do a factory reset. But it's always checking anyways.
Yeah, it's always checking. When we went last week, the reason I was not here, Dave and Steve did just an admirable job. The reason I was not here is because I was in Arizona celebrating Christmas with my daughter and my in-laws. And for the plane, I downloaded a half a dozen movies onto my Chromebook, which ran just fine, thank you. Locally, obviously, you can't, you've got to put it into airplane mode. But I downloaded them from Google Play, bought them first, and downloaded them to my Chromebook, and watched movies there and back again.
So did you let the people around you watch, too?
If they wanted to. It's a big screen. I was using my other Chromebook, which has a bigger screen.
I was on a train once, and the guy two rows ahead of me was watching Deadpool.
Yeah.
And so I was watching Deadpool, but that's not quite a movie you want to watch on a public train.
Yeah, right.
But it's a good movie.
Yeah. But it's a good movie.
Yeah.
Deadpool 2 wasn't that... Yeah, that was okay.
Wasn't as good. I downloaded Deadpool and The Kingsman.
Another good one, yeah.
Movie, and My Favorite Year, which is my favorite movie, and a couple of others, and I watched them.
What was the other one?
My Favorite Year.
Okay.
Great comedy. Great comedy. Peter O'Toole. The whole cast is just utterly amazing. It's a wonderful, wonderful ensemble piece.
Little Women.
Yeah.
Number of folks it's not getting great reviews.
No, it's not.
They say it's very, and a couple of my friends were saying, as we were talking about movies, and I want to see the Star Wars one, and a couple of folks went to see Little Women, and they were saying it was very depressing, very dark.
Very dark.
And not that great of a movie for what they all touted to be.
Yeah.
And it's oh, that's
sad. We went to see Knives Out, and it was amazing.
Oh, I've heard that's
great.
It was
amazing. It was amazing.
My barber told me this morning. Yeah. He just went and saw. He says, you got to go see that one. I went, oh, okay. Put it on my list.
You went to your barber this morning? There's an easy job. Yeah. Oh, I mean, good
no
for you.
No, clip job.
Does he charge you by the hair?
Yeah. Knives Out was...
That's the only way he's going to get rich on my head.
Right. Knives Out was amazing. I haven't seen the Star Wars yet. I understand that it's not being well received.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, the critics don't like it, but most of the fans do. It ties up a lot of loose ends. But it's very formulaic, which all the Star Wars movies have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what are you expecting?
Yeah. There's good guys, there's bad guys, there's the problem, they have to solve it.
Yeah. And, work it all out, which they usually do in the end.
Yeah.
Hello? Right. That's the way most movies go. Yeah. I don't know what's so, earth-shattering news about that.
Yep.
But, I'll have to put that one down.
Knives Out was excellent. It was excellent.
How was it?
It was excellent. It was all right. It was okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it was all
right. I saw the cast of the new Star Wars on one of the talk shows, and J.J. Abrams was saying he had been getting Anthony Daniels' name wrong for years. It's Anthony Daniels.
Yeah.
Not Anthony Daniels.
Yeah.
But Anthony's just too polite and British to ever correct him.
As are most British.
And it turns out that Anthony is the only actor to appear in all 9 movies.
Right.
Because David Prowse passed away.
Right.
Kenny Baker passed away. The droids are the only characters to appear in all 9 movies.
Right. Trivia.
Yeah. Yep.
Star Wars trivia.
and we joke that being dead doesn't mean you can't be in the next movie.
That's the truth. And I've been watching, you know, speaking of Netflix and Amazon Prime, I'm in the middle of The Witcher. I read the series. The books are amazingly good.
Yeah, I've heard that series is good, too.
They're tremendous. And the series is very good.
Did you read the watch the Jack Ryan series?
Yeah, it's on my list.
It's on my list, yeah. I'm getting through The Expanse now. Season 5, I think.
Oh, I heard.
I've read all the books, though, so it's almost anticlimactic.
Right.
But there's enough difference.
Are they following the book? Are they doing?
Overall, yes, they're following the books.
One other thing that he happened to say was he has the Disney Plus.
Yeah.
And he said, evidently, some program that a lot of folks watch is being canceled. So a lot of people are dropping their trials.
Oh, it's not. It's The Mandalorian.
Yes.
Which was also great. But it's eight series. Eight episodes.
Yeah.
And it's done. And so people are now canceling.
Yeah.
Because they're done with it.
And they're finding out that a lot of the movies that, you know, that they tell. It's a little. He was saying he thinks that Disney is going to rethink this because it's not, you know, what people were expecting.
Right.
Expectations were way up here.
Right.
And what they're getting.
Well,
is
that's
way
why
down.
They're rushing out WandaVision and they're rushing out a couple of other things. The Boys.
I've started watching that. It's the collateral damage of superheroes.
Yes.
It's great.
It's different from the comics.
Yeah.
But it's very.
I haven't read any of the comics, so I.
I have.
What was the one David Tennant was in?
Oh, the Terry Pratchett thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good Omens. There it is.
Good Omens. That. Brilliant.
That's on my list.
Brilliant. Don't hesitate. Don't wait. It's brilliant.
And see, that's
particularly
where...
Michael Sheen and David Tennant together. Holy crow, they're excellent.
That was a debate that I got into with a couple other folks from Steve and I doing the show last week is about, you know, Tom Galisano and all of a sudden
expanding
to Buffalo and trying to convince these other folks, just like Steve and I were trying to do on the radio here, because we had a couple callers call in about it, is they're two different pies.
Right.
He's created another, say, apple pie over here. He's got the cherry pie here, which he's been trying to expand and get it up and get it out faster to more folks because he's a visionary. He sees where we are going with our tools. And everybody nowadays, a lot of them are cutting the cord. More and more are watching movies and that type of stuff on streaming services.
A whole generation of kids are growing up that never used cable TV.
Yeah. And, just that you can get a movie, you know, and watch it for a little bit. If you want, pause it. You can do that. Yeah. And then go back to it if you want to. Because you've got the internet speed and you can do it.
When we went to see Star Wars, they had an opening PSA. It was the Charmin Bears came on screen with a giant glass of water and started pouring it. And you can go to the bathroom now. Because you know you're going to have to 20 minutes in.
Yeah.
It's safe now. The movie's not going to start for a while.
That's nice. That's funny.
I should have followed his advice.
Yeah.
The credits roll and you rush to the bathroom. I went back to watch the rest of the credits.
There's an app you can load called RunPee.
Oh, so, yeah. I've heard about that.
But it's a paid app that tells you when in a movie it's safe to go to the bathroom. So you're not going to miss anything.
Oh, really?
But it's a paid... there's a free version, but it doesn't have new films in it.
Okay.
If you want films that are currently in the theaters, you pay.
Like Steve said,
it's called RunPee.
Yeah.
Go before you eat.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
that's
and
what
then
I
when
used
you're
to...
on a five-hour airplane flight,
oh,
you dang well better go into that flight empty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because cramming yourself in that little stall.
Well, first there's that little stall, and then for the one up front, you cannot congregate up front. You cannot line up near the
front
cockpit.
By the
Right, so the aisle was constantly full of people running back and forth and glaring at each other, not having the guts to explain why they need to be first. But It was
on a scale of 1 to 9. How?
Yeah, right. How often do you need the bathroom?
I'm prairie dogging. No.
Yeah, right. oh. But it was. Yeah, it was. It was hectic for some people, and of course, you know when. What was funny was even if somebody was in the aisle when an older person got up, they sat back down, and then the old person went. You know. Hold up old people going to the bathroom. Don't do it. But yeah, it's this Run P will tell you when you can go to the bathroom in any movie. And don't even think about leaving the theater during Knives Out. Every single second is important. And the cast.
Well, I'll probably.
Holy crow.
Are there a lot of knives?
There are a lot of knives. There's a chair made
a chair of knives.
Knives in the background.
I think probably have to wait and get it on at Redbox or one of those services because right now going to the movie.
No, I get it, but you're going to love it.
So one other thing, though, since you went on vacation, you have other good news to share, too, though.
I do. I'm very excited. My favorite daughter in the whole world, we spent Christmas with her. And also... she's coming home. She'll be back in Rochester at 4 o'clock this afternoon. She got a new job and she'll be living in Rochester. It's very exciting. She's got an apartment. She did all this long
distance. That's the exciting part.
Yeah. She got an apartment. She got, you know, she got everything squared away, got her internet and everything else. She's one of those people who never cut the cord because she never had the cord. She's of that generation that has never had cable television. Well, at home, I mean, when she was a kid,
yeah,
we have it. But she, since she's been out in the world, everything she does is online. Every single thing.
That's why Gail Lozano is at least in touch.
Yeah,
his people are in touch, and his advisors have got a good handle on the pulse of the future of way internet and everything else. Is going to jump in on it while it's still young, because green light is growing and Spectrum. I'm sorry, is really worried.
They should be,
you know, because more and more folks are going to be cutting the cord and saying, "Yeah, no, why? I can go get faster service for less money."
That's why so many cable.
How
TV
do you fight that?
Yeah, that's why so many cable TV companies bought internet services and are buying content producers and merging with TV channels and buying TV channels. So,
but there's always that fear.
Yeah.
That if you are getting your internet through a cable company, that they will slow down the rival services.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it hasn't happened here yet.
Tick, tick,
well,
tick.
But tick, tick, tick. Exactly. All right, we're going to... this hour is done. We're done with our first hour. But we're going to do a whole nother hour of this nonsense, and maybe we'll even talk about computer stuff in the next hour. That would be unusual. So we'll be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be back in just a few minutes with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in just a few minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. You're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And Dave, we had a text message. Wanting to know how to download Windows 10.
Yeah, Steve and I told him that we got the link on there, and now he wrote back, "Yes, I want. I am by. I don't see it. Where's the page? Where on the page is it? Got it. I need to refresh. Will this download 10 Pro?
No.
Yes. Well, yes.
It
will download all the versions of 10. And you can you install the same edition you have now. So if you have Windows 7 Home, it will install Windows 10 Home. If you have Windows 7 Pro, it will install Windows 10 Pro. If you want to change editions, you'll need to purchase a copy from Microsoft.
Right. So that's how that works.
And that's how that rolls.
Yep. They're really not in the position of giving away things for free if they don't have to.
They definitely can't afford to.
Windows is almost becoming irrelevant in the internet age, and right. Azure is making all their money.
Right, they don't make bucks out of Windows 10 anymore. It's all Azure, which is their online platform. So yeah, and many people actually run Windows in Azure.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you can't run an unauthorized copy up there. You pretty much definitely have to pay for it. And they don't give you a discount. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. Hiya, Walter. What's up?
Hello there. Happy New Year to all of you.
Happy New Year to you.
Okay. The reason I'm calling is a curiosity question, and it relates to this Windows 7 issue.
Sure.
You've helped me before because you do a much better web search than I do, and I've been trying to find out if this situation would occur. I'm using an old program, a Linux program called Q, like Quick, for the number 4 OS. And one of the interesting, I use it on my legacy machine, so I'm not running into any issue with the Windows situation. But one of the interesting parts about this operating system is that you can install it through Windows.
Right.
It's got a Windows EXE. And I was just wondering, if I tell this to other folks, I know several folks who have Windows 7, is that if you install it through the Windows, would you still be in danger of having your Windows OS infected if you connect to the internet? You know, because once you boot on, you get a choice from looking at the videos. You get a choice of going into your Windows or running Q4 OS. So if you choose to go with Q4 OS, go on the internet, is your Windows still vulnerable to something?
Theoretically, no. I've never seen any malware that will jump from inside Q4 OS to Windows.
Beautiful.
But yeah, there may be some that go the other way. I know, you know, if you're running a Windows VM inside of Windows, it's possible for malware to escape the VM. But usually it has to be the same OS on the guest and the host.
Right. So I've never seen one that does that. I'm not going to promise it'll never, ever, ever happen.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen one.
Okay. Great, because this looks like it should be an easy thing for people to still have their Windows 7 programs. You know, like Dave was talking about, just unplug it from the wall, from the internet, and you can continue to run all your Windows programs, et cetera, and not have it infected. And then when you want to hit the internet, go ahead and turn on with Q4 OS. And, I mean, it's a great little program. I'm running an old legacy with a 1 gig of RAM, and it's a 1.8, it's a Celeron processor.
Right.
And I mean, I got LibreOffice. I've got the latest edition of Firefox. I've got, you know, everything I need.
Yep. Q4 OS seems to be running KDE, which is their graphical user interface, which used to be big and bulky and slow and miserable, and I hated it.
Yes, I did too.
And now everybody's saying it's much faster, much leaner. And I may have to try this Q4 OS myself.
Yeah.
They have their Trinity version will run on a 300 megahertz CPU with 128 meg of RAM.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm running.
That's a 46,
it's
right?
Wonderful. It's a wonderful operating system for this legacy machine that I have.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you very much. So I can pass it on. I'll let them experiment with it. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye.
And certainly for anybody who's interested in it, you can run, as Steve said, you can run it on extremely minimal hardware. And you can also run it in a VM. So you can, if you're conversant with VMs, you can play with it. Apparently, you can run it on a Raspberry Pi. Holy moly.
Cool.
Holy moly. All right, back to the phones. And our next caller is our friend Al from Rochester, New York. Hi, Al. What's up?
Hey, guys. Top of the new year to you.
And the rest of the year for yourself.
Thank you. Thank you. Hey, I missed the first couple of minutes of your show, but I just wanted to throw in for everybody, the beginning of the new year, besides being a good time to change the batteries in your smoke detector,
yeah,
probably a really good time to just do a quick copy of all your critical files to a flash drive or CD or anything else you got.
Yeah, do that one extra backup. Good point. Very good point. Look, folks, Al brings up an excellent point. You don't back up enough. That's simply true. And so take this time. You're home anyway. You're relaxing anyway. Start a good backup. Get a nice high density flash drive, or you've got an extra drive somewhere, or you bought pCloud or whatever it is, and do a backup. Make sure everything is backed up. Just in case, one more time, stick it away, label it correctly, and move on. Good point, Al.
Yeah. I mean, if nothing else, you sleep better at night.
That's exactly right. The reality is that we're all systems administrators now. Used to be we weren't. But what differentiates good system administrators from bad system administrators is good system administrators constantly, particularly when they're trying to get to sleep, hear a little tick, tick, tick in the back of their head, because they know something's going to go wrong somewhere, and have they in any way mitigated that disaster that's about to happen?
For sure. I mean, I even went on Walmart website just to check the going rate for flash drives, and I mean, a 64 gigabyte flash drive for $20 or less.
Yeah.
Yep.
Gary, I mean, for most people, that's more than sufficient. I mean, the nutty people like me and the other photographers in the world keep talking terabytes, but
right,
you can. There's certainly enough documents on anyone's PC that they would really regret losing. It's worth $20.
Right, and in particular, when you're talking about photographs, most documents you can, I don't know, somehow recover, but pictures, that moment is gone forever. You know, it's done. So if you don't back up that picture, you don't have that moment anymore.
Yep.
And that's why we
just have another kid.
Yeah, exactly. Take pictures of that one and then lose them. That's why we advocate Google Photos, unlimited free storage at the proper resolution, and why we advocate Google Docs. If you save things in their formats, it doesn't count against your quota, so you can store essentially an infinite amount of stuff.
And one of the things to remember is make sure you go back and make sure the backups worked and you were copying the right file. I can still remember this one poor customer we had that he lost his QuickBooks file and brought in his stacks of CDs, stacks and stacks of CDs he had burned it to, thinking he had burned it to. Turns out the only thing he copied onto the disk was a shortcut to the QuickBooks program. Not even his data file.
Oh man!
And so just dozens of these CDs. We went through them all, and yep, they were all just so the shortcut on the desktop. You just drag that to the CD to burn it, and that's not what you need to do.
That is too bad. That is too.
So plug your disk back into the computer and see if the files are really there.
Yeah,
just in case.
Hey, one other side comment, just to your audience. Something I've learned over the many years I've been playing around. If you think to yourself, well, I'm not really playing around in dangerous areas of the internet, I don't have to worry about viruses and all that stuff, I found that the biggest danger to my data and my precious pictures is not a virus, not a Windows update, my own fat fingers quickly erasing something and not realizing it until it's too late.
Yep.
Right.
I'm the biggest danger to my data.
A lot of the photo programs these days now have realized that, and when you delete a photo, it goes into the trash and stays there for a month.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Yeah. But yeah, you're absolutely right, Al. More damage is done by accident than by virus. But you still need it. The solution is the same. Back up. And the more backups you have, and particularly the more off-site backups you have, the safer you are. Excellent, excellent, Al. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And hey, have a good year, both all of you, please.
You too. You and yours. Have fun.
Yeah. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Always something. Although let's something. We should remind people to celebrate the perihelion tomorrow morning.
That's right.
At 2:47 a.m. Eastern Time, Earth makes its closest approach to the sun.
What's the proper celebration, celebratory mode? Is it dancing naked under the stars, or is it taking a couple of drinks?
Yeah. Because we're in an elliptical orbit, it's also our fastest movement in the orbit. We're traveling at 67,000 miles an hour.
Well,
when we go around the Earth, when we go around the sun at 91 million miles.
Right, right.
Zippy. So I wonder, do flat earthers think the sun is a ball? Do they think the orbit is elliptical? Are the other planets spheres?
Yeah,
and it's
that's
just
a good
Earth?
Question. That's a very good question.
Apparently, the latest theory is it's an oblate sphere. We are an oblate spheroid. They think the Earth might be a torus, like a donut. So that's why ships fall off the edge instead of disappearing.
It's still not flat.
Because they're sinking below the horizon, meaning the horizon is curving away from you.
Oh, so it's sort of like a lozenge with a dip in the middle.
Yeah.
All right, back to the just go read some Discworld and make yourself happy. We're going to go back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Yeah, hi. Listen, Steve, I wish you hadn't said what you just said. I get kind of car sick sometimes. And I'm going around the sun that fast.
68,000 miles an hour, yeah.
Oh, quiet for the man.
I don't have any adrenaline here either. Anyway, I'm sorry, I called in a bit late, so I hope I'm not asking something that you guys already asked about. I'm moving my file to my drive, which is an old, regular drive, to a solid state drive. And I'm wondering, what do I have to do? My original, before I had Windows 10, I was on Windows 7. Do I need to insert my Windows 7 disks in order to do that transfer to move the files from the old spinning hard drive to a solid state drive?
If you're just doing a clone, then probably not. Usually what happens is you use another a utility, like CloneZilla is one we've talked about, and you boot that on a flash drive and tell it to copy the spinning drive to the solid state drive. Because it's sometimes tricky to copy data from the drive you're running from. So if you just want to clone it, that's the easiest way to do it. In fact, I've even seen some raw drives will come with cloning software because they kind of expect that's what you're going to do.
Yeah, this one doesn't. I got something from Samsung, but it's just a drive.
Just a raw drive, yeah.
No software.
So if you want to be cleaner about it, you install the new SSD, install Windows fresh, and then just copy your data files and the applications you need so it doesn't carry along any cruft that you've built up over the years.
Right. But
that takes a lot longer.
When you say install Windows fresh, again, I want to install Windows 10, obviously. Not Windows 7, but do I have to start with Windows 7?
Do you already have Windows 10 installed on the computer?
Currently, yes.
Yeah, then it's created what's called a digital license with Microsoft, and when you log back into your Microsoft account, it will recognize that license. Except it's now in a new hard drive, so it might yell at you thinking you made an illegal copy, so there's a reactivation process you may have to do.
Okay, reactivation.
It'll lead you through it. You make a call to them and explain that you put in a new drive, and about 99% of the time they just say, okay, here's your code.
And it's usually all automated. You don't even talk to a person.
Right.
Yeah, I was wondering. I didn't think there were any live people to speak to anymore.
No, hardly.
Okay. All right, then. It should be doable, then.
Yeah, it should be.
Okay. One other question, if I can continue.
Go ahead.
Somebody else is waiting. In Microsoft these days, Windows and Windows programs, I believe, are a very small fraction of their business at this point. They move on to other things like the cloud.
Right.
And I'm wondering, really, how much effort do they put anymore into, you know, maintenance and even promoting Windows as an operating system and applications that run under it? So is that worth
not a whole
timing?
Lot. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's part of what's been going on with these constant horrible updates from Microsoft. They're cutting back. They've gotten rid of 99% of their quality assurance people. You rarely see, comparatively, rarely see any ads for Windows itself. You'll see Microsoft ads touting the cloud and their hardware and all of that stuff, but you rarely see an ad anymore for Windows. There's a lot of speculation about what Microsoft is going to do with Windows, and it's still, I mean, it's a small part of their business. It's still a multi-million-dollar business, right? You know, they make billions a year, so they're still making millions off of Windows, but they're not putting nearly the effort into it that they used to, and certainly not putting nearly the resources in it that they used to, and that's, of course, part of what the issue is.
Another motivation to move to either Linux or Chromebooks.
Well, and that's just it. Chromebooks, Google still updates Chromebooks every couple of weeks, and they're always adding new features. Now, like I said, you can run Android apps and Linux on it, and it's much, much better all the way around.
It's a great replacement, and a lot of worries are now gone, that you don't have to worry about the spyware, the malware, your machine being bricked.
Right.
All right, very good. Thanks for the help again.
Thanks. Bye bye. Yeah, when we went on vacation, I took my Chromebook, and I still got to do all the work I usually do in Linux. I got to do all the stuff I normally do on my phone. So it all worked out very nicely, and I got to watch movies and I listened to sound bites through the thing, and it was I missed nothing. So, if you're looking at a Chromebook, again, unless you are running a specific program that specifically needs Windows, you can pretty much manage to replace everything with a Chromebook. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Neil from Honey Oy Falls?
Honey Oy Falls. Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm good. I'm following up on a topic from last week, in which it was, hey, what gadgets did you get around Christmas time?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so this is internet-related, but it's also heating-related.
Yeah.
I have a number of hot water valves that control six different zones in my home. And those valves are opened by 24-volt AC power. And so by installing all these Wi-Fi-enabled thermostats throughout the home, I can control the heat from anywhere in the planet. I can say, oh, I forgot to turn the heat down in the den. Let me turn it down with my phone.
You go off to work and freeze your Wi-Fi out.
It made it a lot easier to manage the heat in the home. But I was not able to control my gas fireplace, because gas fireplace valves work on a millivolt system rather than 25 volts. So the way any thermostat in a home is controlled is you install just a doorbell or a chime thermostat or transformer.
Right.
That steps down 110 volts to 24 volts.
Right.
Then you bring 24 volts to your doorbell, or you bring it to your HVAC or whatever, and that's where your thermostat takes over. But it runs on 24 volts, as do these particular thermostats that I bought, which RG&E pushes. They're Ecobee. They're out of Canada, out of Toronto, and they're really, really sweet. They're touch screen. They are nice to look at. They're really accurate. So I said, why can't I control my fireplace with that? And I found that that thermostat would be pushing 24 volts right. to a millivolt gas valve, and it would burn it out.
Sure.
So I did a little bit of research, and I found that if I communicate to the fireplace via a relay, mm-hmm. I was able to take the 24 volts from my transformer attached to the brand new Ecobee thermostat and then communicate to the fireplace through a relay that would take the you need three wires, so you need a red, a white, and then a third wire called a C wire. And what I can do is I can post my diagram, but the bottom line is a relay allows for voltage in, and it turns a switch open or closed. That's right. what it does. So you choose, because there are three wires that go into the relay. One is for 120 volts AC. You do not use that wire. So then the other wires left are the 10 to 30 volt and what they call a common wire. You use those two wires. Those wires come from your thermostat.
Nice.
And then you go out to the fireplace millivolt gas valve using three wires to the red and the white wire that go to the fireplace. I'll post it somehow or other to you folks so you can see how I did it. But the relay was $12 from Amazon. And now I'm controlling my gas fireplace with the same thermostat.
Nice. Cool. Very nice.
Sweet.
Because I'm not entirely sure that I want to initiate an open flame when I'm not home, but
yeah.
But you can, you can turn it off if you got to.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it is. And the only downside to this is that because in a power outage, your router will right. be out, your current to your thermostat will be out. The only way that you're going to get the gas fireplace to work, which will possibly be your only heat source,
right?
You don't have a generator to run your furnace, is you just leave the original thermostat, which has batteries in it, that supplies that millivoltage to close. All you're doing is you're just sending enough current to the gas valve to open it up, and then the pilot light, which is always on,
right?
Will you actually, could, you know,
right? You could probably also use a battery backup system connected to that and get enough voltage to run it for months. Listen, we got to take a break.
Okay,
thank you
hey,
so
you
much.
Guys,
back in just a couple of minutes.
Every week,
thank you.
It's
back in just
my...
a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Meenik Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member supported. Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and I'd like to apologize to everybody on the YouTube channel because I was chair dancing.
Same here.
And then,
you got it.
Yeah. Okay. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Jeff from Rochester, New York. What's up, Jeff?
Jeff? Hello? Oh, I'm there? Okay. I thought I was the thing was still on. Sorry about that. I just want to make a comment about the fellow that was converting his fireplace.
Yeah.
If he uses relays switching millivolt levels, he should probably use like a mercury-wetted relay or something that will switch those low voltages, because if you use a regular relay, sometimes there's not enough voltage to break through the film on the contacts, and when it switches, nothing happens because the circuit isn't made.
Right. Good thought. Thank you.
All right. Very good. Take care.
Thank you, sir. Yep.
We had a text message. Mike from Victor bought a Google Mesh network, wants to know if he should keep it, return it and get, because it's unopened,
yep.
Return it and get a Google Nest, now that Google is all Nest products, or get an Orbi. So here's the big difference between Google Nest and Orbi. Google Nest is a lot more expensive than an Orbi. That's first. One nice thing about Google Nest is that every Google Nest box also has a Google Mini in it. So you can do, you know, ask Google various things and get answers and stuff from wherever that thing is. So that's nice. Orbi less expensive and I think much easier to set up. And it certainly seems to do everything I need it to do. And as Steve said, Netgear, who makes the Orbi, has been in business a whole lot longer.
Yeah.
In the business of routers a whole lot longer than Google has. I think either one would be a decent product. I have an Orbi.
Same here, and I love it. And it was so simple to set up.
Yeah, exactly.
It was. It literally...
Though if you have a lot of other Nest devices, it probably talks to them a little better.
Right, right. So it depends on your circumstances. Both are good products. If you've got Nest devices already, and if you want to be able to walk up to your mesh network and ask it Google things because it has a Google Mini built in, then you definitely want the Google Nest system. If you don't need those things, an Orbi is certainly an excellent product.
And should we throw in the Eero, too, while we're at it? The other major mesh network company.
Right. Also an excellent product. So all of them will work. All of them will be fine. You just decide which set of features you want.
That satellite, though, the plug-in satellite is what I have. Boy, servers are upstairs.
Yeah.
Because like you, I've got an older house. I've got the Faraday cage, I swear, I live in, especially down in the computer room. The wall's there. Even my phone service isn't great. If somebody calls me and I'm in the room there, I have to walk out into the kitchen because all of that chicken wire in the walls and all that, it just blocks it. So I have to go out in the kitchen and then people, oh, that's a lot better. Yeah, I know that. So that's why I always move out there.
Sure.
But extender on that, even it's great.
Yeah, it really is.
Getting it, you know, getting the Wi-Fi service out there, it's right. Very impressive.
Well, and the other thing with both of them, I think, but I know definitely with the Google Nest is you can add additional satellites.
Yeah, and the thing of it is though is you just plug the thing. That was the great part about it because I did have by Netgear a TP-Link, but that doesn't work with the Orbi.
Right.
Even though it's Netgear. But this plug-in satellite, it was so simple that you literally just plug it in, folks. I hit the button on the side that said sync.
And you were done.
I was done.
Yeah.
Hello? Yeah. You can't get any easier than that. On the TP-Link that I had before from Netgear, I had to go in and put in the network name and all this other stuff. No. It just did it.
Just does it. Just connects and you're done.
Yeah.
All right, Sonos. A lot of people have Sonos speakers. Sonos was the first to make multi-room audio easy to set up, but swallowing the cost of its speakers wasn't always as easy. Even in the age of internet-connected speakers from Google and Amazon, Sonos enjoys continued success thanks to its commitment to sound quality. However, the company has come under fire for the wasteful way it encourages customers to upgrade to new speakers. It bricks the old ones.
Huh?
Sonos' defense of this practice is also laughably inept. Even small Sonos speakers can cost several hundred dollars, which can make Sonos devotees hesitant to upgrade their expensive systems. So Sonos implemented the trade-up program that offers customers a 30% discount on select new speakers if they recycle the old ones. That sounds like a good deal at first, but Sonos really means It wants those old but perfectly functional speakers out of circulation. Owners have to activate recycle mode on their old speakers to get the discount, which is really just a euphemism for self-destruct. After a 21-day countdown, the speaker stops working forever.
So you can't recycle it and then sell it to someone
else,
too.
What a waste! Right.
Please understand the speakers are completely functional from a hardware standpoint. Sonos servers, however, will never again allow someone to activate them. Some customers have also accidentally tripped recycle mode, only to find there's no way to stop the countdown. Sonos might as well just ask people to take a hammer to their old speakers and dump them in the trash. Sonos has attempted to respond to this, saying that it wants Sonos users to have access to the newest features at reasonable prices. For those that choose to trade up to new products, we feel that the most responsible action was not to reintroduce them to new customers that may not have had the context of them as a 10-year-old product, and that also may not be able to deliver the Sonos experience they expected, Sonos says. So, Sonos is claiming this is better for consumers because no one will end up with speakers that don't have modern features. It's an interesting angle, but it ultimately falls flat because it encourages wasteful disposal of working devices.
Yeah.
Old Sonos speakers are often worth more than you'd get in discounts, too, and that means more environmentally friendly. As many have pointed out, the best way to recycle an electronic device is to give it to someone else or refurbish it for resale. With Sonos speakers, the company's policy means most of the materials, like plastic, will end up in a landfill. Do you have Sonos speakers? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
And especially, I don't know of these speakers that you speak of. Ooh, pun. But if their styles, they're still the same, and they're just, you know, getting them back and then reworking the insides and then reselling them.
They're not taking them back. You throw them out.
Huh?
I say, turn up your hearing aid.
I don't have it in.
Yeah, they don't take them back. You just throw
them
away.
You had to send them back.
Oh, no.
Oh, what a waste.
So, well, yeah, so that's what to do. Instead of requiring you to send them back, they brick them. So they know you can't take the 30% discount and sell them to somebody else. So I
bought them. They're mine.
I can see the board meeting where this made sense. Hey, we'll give you a 30% discount when you trade up, as long as you stop using the old ones. Yeah, let's do that. Right. Oh yeah, but we want to make sure they just don't sell them to somebody else too.
Right.
So let's do that.
Yeah.
And they just announced this plan last October, and it drew fire almost immediately.
Almost, and still is.
Yeah. Especially because, you know, $200 is the cheapest Sonos.
Right.
New.
Right. So if you get $60 off, that's great. But what if I just sell them for $70?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? That's
and they don't go
deal.
In a landfill.
And they don't go in a landfill.
Well, you're supposed to recycle electronics responsibly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happens.
Mm-hmm. And I got a bridge for you.
Actually, the article I found, someone had found four of the Sonos Play 5s, which were $500 each, in a recycle bin. So someone had put them in the electronics recycle bin, yeah. But that's $2,000 worth of stuff that you could have sold instead of marking them as unusable and because you recycled them.
I'm sure somebody at this moment is working on a way to bypass the...
Oh, yeah.
Well, the problem is because it reports back to Sonos home.
Right,
so you didn't used to have to make a Sonos account to set up your Sonos speaker. You could do it on your own network.
Right. But now you do, and you have to register that speaker.
Yep.
So it's Sonos who says, nope, can't use this anymore.
Are they any better than Bose?
A lot of people think so. The biggest thing... Because we sell, full disclosure, we sell the Sonos brand in our store. They are very popular for Wi-Fi speakers, for wireless speakers. And they connect to the internet, so you can play your Spotify and your Pandora, your Apple Music, all the internet services. They connect to your local devices, so they can play music from your phone and your computer. And they don't need to be wired, because they're a wireless speaker. They just have a power cord. And now the new Sonos Move has a built-in rechargeable battery, which is kind of neat. So we have a lot of people that like them out on, you know, take them out on the back porch, for parties and then bring it back in when you're done. So they are, and they sound really, really good. The little tiny Sonos One, which is the $200 speaker, can fill our office with rich sound. It doesn't distort when you crank the volume up. So they're really good speakers, but they are pretty expensive.
Right.
They also make a really nice home theater setup with the sound bar and the subwoofer and the whole bit too.
Yeah, what's that go back?
And the rear. Let's see. The sound bar is $600. The subwoofer is $600. And then if you want the rear speakers, they're $200 a piece. What's nice about them is people, if anyone's ever tried to wire up surround sound in your house, you have to wire it up.
Right.
And so stringing wires around your living room to get to the rear speakers is very annoying. And so being able to do it wireless is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's definitely got an advantage.
Yeah. But they're more,
I got my Realtek on my computer, and that's good enough for me.
They're more on tier with the Bang & Olufsen and the... Harman Kardon and the other very high end audio brands.
Okay,
there's a joke in the audio industry that if you can't hear the highs and you can't hear the lows, well, then it must be Bose.
Man, I have Bang & Olufsen in my Chromebook.
In your Chromebook, yeah.
Pretty nice.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing with Beats. That they're well known for the bass.
Very good bass.
Very good bass. The latest ones, they've done pretty good to even it out. So even mid-range and high-end works sounds really good.
But if you're listening to the right kind of music, then a Beats headset is perfect.
Okay.
But if you're listening to other types of music, then not so much.
Okay.
Yeah.
I still remember that scene in early on in Risky Business when Dad complains that the stereo equalizer is set too high to bass. Yeah. So then when Tom Cruise starts dancing, you see him push all of them to bass.
I like I said, I took my Chromebook on vacation, and the sound was great. The sound was excellent. Of course, I mostly listened through headphones because I didn't want to obviously disturb anybody else on the plane, but it was pretty nice.
We've got this cool little thing we sold a bunch of for Christmas called the Airfly. And it's a Bluetooth transmitter for a headphone jack, basically. So it turns any non-Bluetooth device into a Bluetooth device.
Nice.
And they target the airline industry. So you want to listen to the movie the airplane is showing, but you don't want to have the wired speakers to your seat back? Well, you plug this in and use your own Bluetooth headset.
Oh, very nice.
But if you have a cassette deck or if you have, say, in your car, you have a headphone jack... but you don't have a Bluetooth set, so this turns any non-Bluetooth speaker into a Bluetooth speaker.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's what I have in my car. My car does not have Bluetooth.
My wife got so mad the other day. She realized that the new car she got last year, well, everything's last year now. She bought a new car last spring. Didn't have a CD player in it.
Ah.
Because she does everything on her iPad. Well, she bought some CDs and couldn't play them in her car.
You sure it doesn't have
because the new one doesn't have a CD player.
The new one doesn't have a CD player.
Many of the newer cars don't.
They have Bluetooth and they have aux because they expect you to use your phone.
Right.
So I've been trying to show her how to rip a CD and put it on her iPad, but I just want to play my CD. Okay.
Now, on the other hand, years ago, this is what, 4 or 5 years ago, my father-in-law bought a car and he sat me down one day and he said, look, I'm giving this car to Amelia when I go, because he was very old. And he said, I want you to understand, I am buying everything that at the time, this
fully loaded.
Right. Honda Accord had fully loaded.
Mm-hmm.
So when Amelia got it, we were going through it. And I said, oh, Amelia, it's got a 6 CD changer in it. And she said,
ooh.
Dad, I've only got 5 CDs. she does everything else on her phone.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right? So she's that kid who...
She's of that generation.
She's of that generation. She had everything happens on her phone.
But it does mean there's an aux in to the head end of the stereo that she can probably get her phone plugged into.
Right. So she does that, but then she went out and bought another CD, so she had 6 of them, so she could put them all in.
Oh.
But she said, I still don't listen to them. She said, all my new music is on my phone.
Yeah, and you can change that up so easy.
Right, right. So she doesn't really use a 6-CD changer. I wonder if we can get it out of our car and put it in Shirley's.
Maybe.
But yeah, so she's, and it really does have everything. Oh, man, we rented a Nissan Rogue when we were in Arizona, and it has not just cruise control. But the cruise control that has lane assist.
Yep. Shirley's RAV4 has that too.
So if you swerve
Wander.
Too far, it swerves back for you. It actually does
steers,
it for
it's
you.
Just
it's
about
it's almost
drive itself.
Driving itself, and it has a mode for cruise control where it actually will slow down if the car in front of you slows down.
Yep.
So brake That's assist, nice. I think they call
yeah.
that.
Although what I did find is it will stop if the car in front of you stops, but it won't start up again when the car leaves.
Right.
So
right.
Yeah, yes. I found that I don't like that lane assist because I tend to drive a little bit onto the outside.
Right.
In case the guy coming the other way is crossing the line. And it always fights me to go dead center of the lane.
Right. And I tend... I tend to do the race car thing of driving a line through a curve, if you know what that means. Mm-hmm. Instead of going around the curve, you drive as much of a straight line through it as you can.
Yep.
I've always done that. It's the way I was trained.
Yeah.
And
shortest distance.
So it screamed at me every time we came to a curve.
The other thing, though, I'm liking and more are starting to take on is the heads-up display.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
That is cool.
I tell you what I... dislike.
You know how you can make your own? There's apps for your device you can do that, and you set it on top of the
dashboard
and it projects onto it. Yeah.
There's one thing I dislike about every car out today. My Cube, which sadly they don't make anymore, has a left-hand cup holder next to the steering wheel, between the steering wheel and the door. And when I first saw that, I thought, that's the stupidest idea I've ever heard of. It's the most convenient thing on the planet. Because then I can keep a cup right there. It's right there. I don't have to even do anything down here, right? And more importantly, I can put my little cup holder, phone holder.
Oh, the...
For my WeatherTech.
WeatherTech one.
And I can put it right there, and now I'm pretty much in line of sight, but not blocking anything when I'm using the maps. That is the ideal thing.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
Although, for my daughter, I bought one that clips into the vent.
Yep.
And she says it works perfectly.
I've always worried about those getting your device too hot in the
winter. With the heat.
Or too cold in the summer wouldn't be bad because things like cold.
But, the heat. Yeah, it does heat up because, it'll one of...
you close that vent. Right?
The heat,
that's what you have to do.
Yeah, you can close it, but the heat still comes out.
Yes. Yeah. Not all of them have my car doesn't have the inner door. You have to shut the louvers to stop.
Oh, okay.
And when you have your phone thing stuck in there, you can't shut the louvers.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
No, but I love the little cup holder. It's right there. It's just to the left of the steering wheel. I don't have to see take my eyes hardly off the road at all. Just glance down and back up again.
My car has one in the door under the armrest.
Yeah,
getting to it is not easy. Yeah.
Is that the bottle holder?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a bottle holder. So when you open your door, your bottle is there waiting for you.
Right.
It's not a cup holder while you're driving.
Right. So I much prefer that little left-handed cup holder. Unfortunately, nobody makes those anymore. But it was nice. It had this 7-inch display. And when I connect my phone to it, and I can see where this is convenient if you actually own the car.
Yeah.
But I was renting a car. The first thing it says is, do you want to put all your contacts in here? Oh, hell no.
But did you look to see who else had?
Yes, I did.
I did that with the last rental I got. I looked. It asked me the same thing. I said no, and I wait a minute. Let's look through these contacts.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently a lot of people had put their contacts into it.
Yep. I made sure mine didn't have any of that stuff in it. All right, so that music tells me that we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank all the people who called in. I'm Nick Francesco. It's a brand new year. It's a brand new start. I hope that all of you had a lovely 2019 and a truly lovely holiday season. And now that all the holidays, Christmas, New Year's, and everything else are over, I hope 2020 is kinder to all of us. We will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. So set a timer, tell your smart speaker, whatever you have to do, and we will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to each other. See you next week.